Again. You know, you can say, you can make mistakes, you can mess up here. And I found the church to be very forgiving. Maybe I'll say a story about one child, and I'll sit down, and my wife will tell me that story was about the other child. Or maybe I'll say 1 Corinthians and I should have said 2 Corinthians, or all kinds of things. But one thing I learned is do not mess up when announcing that it's March 13th through 16th for Higher Ground, not May. And it doesn't seem to matter. I wrote it down correctly, but anyways. But I do appreciate your charity, your love, and tolerance of a little bit. I certainly appreciated Nick's comments this morning before communion as he's talked about his children and what is he doing. Well, it just fit in so well. He's planting a tamarisk tree, isn't he, in the lives of his children as he explains to them the very creation story. And so I want us to begin by remembering, keep those who are planting in your prayers. Be one of those who are planting. Because I listen to story after story about not just remembering a particular tree that was planted and how good the fruits of that tree were, but people that were looking for new sites, that had a new person in mind, that they have now the courage and the desire and the passion to be a place of peace, an oasis. But I want to talk tonight about numbers. Now, the picture behind me, probably only one other person knows where this comes from. But it was a duck race that was in Irving, Texas. Each of the ducks is serialized, and they're poured into a lagoon, and they slowly drift. Now, one of those is going to cross the line first. But just imagine in a sea of ducks on the water trying to count them. It's like herding cats. In fact, numbers to you could mean all kinds of things. If we talk about numbers, some of you are like, oh, I'm already asleep. Some of us, I'm the engineering type, I want to look at numbers. But we're going to be looking into the book of Numbers, and we'll begin in chapter 1. But I need to issue a few disclaimers. You see, Mark Twain, when he thought about numbers, he thought about statistics. He said, there are three kinds of lies. There are lies, there are, and I paraphrase, bald-faced lies, and there's statistics. He also went on to say, figures often beguile me, particularly when I have to arrange them myself. And it was Churchill who is at least attributed with saying, and he said so many things, I don't doubt that he said something very like this. He said, the only statistics you can trust are those you falsify yourself. And you can imagine as Churchill trying to hold a nation together, looking and poring over data and said, do we really want to show the people that? Is there a more optimistic way that we can show the data? As I look at the algebra of war, and I look at how much is being sunk in the Atlantic. Do I really want to report that, or do I want to have a chance to, in a sense, manipulate it myself? But then there was the guy who recently told me, you know, 86.4% of all statistics are made up. All right, there's a few people still hanging with me. But let's believe. Let's go to Numbers, and these are God's numbers. And let's begin in chapter 1 and verse 1. This is the first census. The Lord spoke to Moses in the tent of meeting in the desert of Sinai on the first day of the second month of the second year after the Israelites came out of Egypt. He said, take a census of the whole Israelite community by their clans and families, listing every man by name, one by one. You and Aaron are to count according to their divisions all the men in Israel who are 20 years old or more and able to serve in the army, one man from each tribe, each of them the head of his family, is to help you. These are the names of the men who are to assist you. And we'll look at those numbers in just a moment that were recorded in Numbers chapter 1. But we know the story, don't we? They numbered them, they began moving, and just at that brink where they were preparing to take the promised land, spies were sent out. Scout out the land. Tell us what you see. Make your report. And so in Numbers 13, the report comes back. Starting in verse 16, they came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land in which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites, Jebusites, the Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan. But then one man gave a contrarian report. Verse 30, then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, "We should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." And what a bold statement. What words to rally behind, because the Lord had been leading them and is guiding them. And what confidence, he says. And isn't it interesting that it's Caleb who spoke, but not Joshua? But, why is there always a but after great moments? But the men who had gone up with him said, "We can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are." And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, "The land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anak, come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes. We looked the same to them." And so given these two reports, what happens? Well, that night, picking up in Numbers 14, verse 1, that night all the members of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and our children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a leader and go back to Egypt." Now, it's crushing just to read that thousands of years later, isn't it? You just want to go back and say, "Are y'all crazy? Slavery, really? Do you remember how they threw your children into the Nile? Do you remember how they made you make brick out of straw? Do you remember all the heartache? But do you also remember how God led you through here, led you through here, what God has in store for you?" That wasn't to carry the day. And in this regard, they ask, or seem to be very human, very much, too much like us, I guess. And so they wander for 40 years. What happens in those 40 years? Well, they take a new census. And this one in Numbers in chapter 26, beginning in verse 1. "After the plague, the Lord said to Moses and Eleazar, son of Aaron, the priest, 'Take a census of the whole Israelite community by families, all those 20 years old and more who are able to serve the army of Israel. So on the plains of Moab, by the Jordan, across from Jericho, Moses and Eleazar the priest spoke with them and said, take a census of the men 20 years old or more, as the Lord commanded Moses. These were the Israelites who came out of Egypt. Now let's go to our next chart. As we look at the two censuses, on the far left, I have the tribes. And then the second column is the first census from Numbers 1. Then the next column, the second census from Numbers 22. And to the far right, you can see a percent change. And you'll notice some tribes changed drastically. Simeon, down 63%. Manasseh, up 64%. And it's interesting to look at each of those, how some grew in number and some shrunk. But look at that final number, that total. When I first did it, my calculation was 0.0%. I said, there's got to be a change there. There's a little bit. They're not exactly the same. So I put in an extra decimal point. 0.3% change, but to the less, to the smaller. What has changed? If we look at it numerically, we say there's no difference. There is no statistical difference between Jews, but we know better, don't we? What's happened between Census 1 and Census 2? They've traveled through the wilderness, haven't they? For 40 years, trusting in God, seeing their shoes not wear out, their clothes not wear out. Was it perfect time? No. But it is a new generation. One generation said, no! It's too great, we're too small. And the next generation is ready to go. The next generation will take the land that before the generation before would not. And there lies a great story, isn't it? What generation will we be? What generation can we be? Will we be split, as we sometimes see in our own political life? Will some want to say, yes, we can go? Others say, no, we can't. But I want to take you to critical moments, other critical moments in our history, in our United States history. I want to take you to Omaha Beach. And there on the beach of Omaha on June 6, 1944, as one wave would go ashore, it seemed to be chewed up, pinned down, men dying all around. Another wave would then come behind him, and even yet a third wave. And as things were beginning to pile up and as people were dying, various commanders would rally their troops, would take that moment and say various things. And let's look at what General Cota said. Gentlemen, we are being killed on this beach. Let's go inland and be killed. We're just dying here. If we're going to die, let's go die going forward, not just being killed here. And I mentioned the words of Colonel George A. Taylor, as he said on D-Day to his men, the 16th Regiment of the 1st Division. He said, there's only going to be two kinds of people here at the end of the day. Those who are dead and those who are going to die. Let's get off this beach. And I think about that in our own lives. There's only going to be two kinds of people in this world. And if you will, for a moment, let me use this earth as a kind of example. Those who are lost and those who are going to be lost. Because the saved are going where? We're going inland. We're going home. We're going to be with Jesus. What does that mean to us? I want to be there. I want to be those who go inland. I want to be those who or die trying. Because there's a great reward. I want to believe the words in Mark 10. And yes, the context is the rich and the kingdom of God. When they ask, well, then who couldn't be rich if this man can't enter into the kingdom of heaven? Jesus looked at them and said, answering his apostles, with men this is impossible, but not with God. All things are possible with God. We remember those words penned by Paul in Philippians in chapter 4, chained between guards in prison. Chapter 4 and verse 12, Philippians, I know what it is to be in need. And I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all things through Him, through Christ, who gives me strength. That's power. That's power to move on. Regardless of what happens, move on, following God, following His Word, trusting in Him. Because what are the alternatives? Well, there's 10 spies over here. They saw the Lamb. They say, don't do it. Let's listen to them. They're the majority. So often we get in trouble listening to the majority, don't we? Following the crowd. But maybe also, I think about this quote. As it occurred in what's called The Shawshank Redemption, a movie, I know. But this line just echoes in my head. Get busy living or get busy dying. Christians, what does that mean for us? Get busy living for God. There's no other alternative except dying, is there? Trust in Him. Follow Him. So the next time someone talks to you about statistics, about numbers, or asks the question, is this church growing? Don't whip your neck back there to the board. I follow the numbers. I'm curious. I want more people to attend here. But is that really growth? Do I want more 10 spies? Or do I want more Joshua's and Caleb's? And do I recognize that in the wilderness, what's formed? What comes from trouble? What comes from suffering? What comes from perseverance? Character and hope come. So if someone asks, is this church growing? Stop and look around. Look into people's hearts as much as you can. Look at our children. Because I've got a front row seat. I'm watching kids. I'm watching kids grow up in this church. And I've watched them run further than they ever thought they would run. Push themselves harder than they ever thought. Dream higher than they ever thought. And what's echoing in their minds? I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And I say, well, they don't know any better. Isn't that the way to be? Isn't that the way to be? I don't know any way but to trust God and to follow Him. If the church grows, that's great. Guess what? It has problems numerically if we grow. If we don't, we've got problems. People should want to go here, but not everyone does. But don't you remember? God has great plans for you. God planned for a long time, for this very moment. God's will be done. All we have to decide is, do we want to be on His team or not? Do we want to get busy living, or do we want to get busy dying? because there's a dying world out there. But there is hope. There is life. There is joy and peace. Yes, amidst the suffering. Yes, amidst the difficulty. Yes, in the wilderness. And yes, we hunger for plenty. But that's another sermon, another day. Because plenty has got plenty of its own trouble. If you're wrestling with whose side are you going to be on, it seems so obvious, but sometimes it's difficult to commit yourself to that. Commit yourself to doing more, not less. Taking risks for God, trusting in Him, moving mountains. It can be done. As Paul said, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Won't you come and make that commitment to Him now as we stand and sing?